radio about all things all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemon.
This is CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, community radio from Simon Fraser University. Burnaby is located on the ancestral and stolen homelands of the Halkomelem and Squamish-speaking peoples.
You can listen online at cjsf.ca or on our radio app, which you can download from the app or Google Play Store, depending on your device. You can keep up to date on our social media at linktree/cjsfradio and learn more by visiting our website, cjsf.ca.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Intravenous today on this dreary kind of Wednesday. I'm Stella.
I'm Logan.
I'm Rebecca.
And today we will be going in to a very interesting topic, if Rebecca would like to introduce it a bit.
Yeah. Just going to put a slight warning out there. It's a bit of like a sensitive issue, talking about women killing men and women killing their children, or just children in general, and sort of like the representation of them through the media, and also like the societal implications of those representations.
Yeah, and we might be talking about some slightly or maybe majorly triggering content to do with sexual assault and things like that, so just to let you guys all know tuning in. But before we get into that subject, we will start off with a song, and this is Rebecca's song.
Yeah, this is She Could Tell by the Wild Romantics. It's off their 2015 EP, She Could Tell, and it's kind of like a Canadian folk indie rock duet.
Please enjoy.
Once had a girl, she knew me. She knew me. She knew me well. I painted in my face, oh boy. Oh boy.
so unaware. Why do you leave me there in the dark, so unaware? Why do you leave me there in the dark, so unaware? Why do you leave me there in the dark, so unaware? Why do you leave me there in the dark, so unaware? Why do you leave me there in the dark, so
Welcome back. This is CJSF 90.1 FM. You're tuning into Intravenous. Today we're going to be talking about the penal system and representation of women within crime. Just a trigger warning for all of you out there, we will be talking about sexual assault. So if that's something you don't want to listen to, make sure to tune into another radio station.
Or tune in next week.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe Rebecca has a few definitions and things for us to give us a little more context on this subject, as she is a criminology student. So,
yeah, I just wanted to start off with just there's kind of like three different types of like terms in regard to like women killing children. So like I know some of the articles I read, they go through and it's like they sometimes get blurred because they kind of overlap a bit. So there's the term neonaticide, which is when a parent will kill their own child within the first 24 hours of the child being born, which sometimes gets like confused with infanticide, which is where there's a child that's been killed that's less than 1 year old, but it doesn't have to be the parent. And then there's filicide, which is infanticide, but it's a parent that's killed their child under the age of one. Just to like clear, because I was reading like some articles and it sometimes gets a bit confusing because they're all kind of, they're along the same lines. There's just like different, I guess like requirements for like each one. So yeah.
Yeah, I was reading a bit about infanticide too, and they were normally saying it was necessary for the parent to be the one killing, but I guess there's a lot of different definitions under this umbrella of kind of general killing of children. Yep.
Do you want to just get us started into like why you chose this topic, some brief kind
of... I mean, I've studied this topic probably like I guess kind of extensively in like my the last year of my degree that I did, and it's kind of like I find it quite interesting because you hear a lot like in the news of male killers or like men committing violent crimes, but then when you look at like the kind of rare news coverage of when women are violent, there's this like categorization of the mad, bad, or sad. And it's like that this categorization has to happen in order to justify women acting aggressively because it subverts the gender norm and the stereotype that like women have to be like submissive and passive and like maternal. So obviously when women are killing like at all, but especially when they kill their children, it goes completely against this and there has to be a justification of it, taking away from the like women's autonomy to make a decision, like just because they wanted to make that decision. Whereas like you look at men and how they're represented, they're never really categorized as like mad, bad, or sad. It's kind of like they did this catastrophic thing, but aggressive behavior is like in tune with masculinity,
Yeah.
but not with femininity. And it's like especially when you look at the bad category, and it like has its like relationship
Wait,
with like
could you
lesbianism.
Just explain to Mad, Bad, and Sad to the
Oh
audience.
Yeah. So the Mad, Bad, or Sad is these labels placed on women by female violent offenders by like the media, the justice system, and like just society in general. So like the Mad category is sort of there has to be like a mental illness usually as like a reason to why they would do that. Like they're usually classed as mentally deranged, or they've been a victim of some like horrific event in their life, so it's like a trauma related response. When it's the Bad category, they're like perceived as really wicked, and there's like a extra bad element to them beyond their crime. And then the Sad category is similar to the Mad category, but it's sort of like this was a response as they were a victim of violence from themselves. So it kind of, they really like focus in on like this like poor, she's a like sad woman. Mm. She's had like, she's been a victim of God knows what, so she's acted as like that.
I guess it's kind of like a way, if a woman has kind of subverted this this categorization of womanhood, as we're saying, by, you know, killing a child or killing someone else, then when you put this Mad, Bad, and Sad category, you're kind of refitting them into this like womanhood in a sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's also like they're all kind of emotions in a way, and fitting the woman into this kind of emotional state that kind of validates why she did something is taking more away from the act of actually doing it versus that there's some sort of overwhelming emotional reaction that is forcing her to do it, and she's just at the whim of this emotion.
Mm. And it's like, it's used to like protect and make sure like the patriarchy can survive, because like, God forbid there's women that don't fit into the like feminine stereotype that the patriarchy like relies on.
What would be the emotion associated with bad?
With bad? Like, it's kind of, you're crazy, right? Isn't that the
There's
thing?
Mad.
Bad's more
What's
like
the difference between bad and mad?
You're just inherently
You're like
wicked.
You're often it is associated with women that present themselves as what's considered like more masculine. Mm. So a lot of the like bad categorizations of female killers has been like related to lesbian relationships and like masculine clothing.
Wow.
Because it's like they've acted like in such an aggressive way, they don't have like anything mentally wrong with them, therefore they haven't been a victim of like any violence, therefore it has
Must
to be,
be
because
to the,
yeah it yeah. has to be because they were dating a woman, that has to be it, because it goes against like heterosexual norms that like women are like socialized into being like this like it's like this old view of like they're like pure, like virgin heterosexual framework
towards men in every way.
Yeah. So like when they go against that by being a lesbian, they have to then be like this masculinized like version. And it's like I read somewhere there was like they're like monstrous, they're non-women type of thing, and I was like that label that because they are in a lesbian relationship and have killed, they could have killed like a woman, for example, they will be like described as non-women. Like that to me is like the way that that is used as a justification for them to kill someone rather than like, I don't know, any other reason.
Yeah, it seems very much like the representation in the media is either emphasizing how like non-woman one of like a female criminal is, or just kind of emphasizing this care role, like they'll always describe her as like a mom of two or relate it to some sort of familial or caregiving role that kind of reinforces the expectation of femininity.
The deviation from that. It's so like when you look at description of women in general, like even in authors in the back of books, and it's like she married her husband and now has two children in North Carolina. And it's like, I feel like I've never seen the back of a book cover where they describe how this like amazing author has a wife and two kids, you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
It's so
you like see it in politics as well. Mm-hmm. Where it'd be like a female like candidate, and it would be like the like wife of so and so with like this adorable little family and like this little house off like this way, and you're like, that's got nothing to do with like
definitely.
Yeah, a woman is only in relation to other people. Like only a woman only exists in relation to others.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if she doesn't, then she is like just insane or something. Mm. Yeah. In terms of the mad, bad, and sad, I mean.
Yeah. I mean, I was looking at particularly the Eileen Wuornos case when she, because she's kind of been categorized in like nearly all of them.
Mm.
And for like those that don't know, she was like classed as America's first serial killer. Because she killed, I think it was like either 6 or 7 men. I can't remember when, but she was like associated mainly with the like bad category because she was seen to be wearing like clothes that were associated with like truckers and bikers, and was seen as really masculine, as well as the fact that she was in a lesbian relationship. But like just because she subverted this like traditional stereotype, they didn't. Like the media never looked into like her backstory that led to her killing those men. Like I read like this like Marxist take on it that her killing could be seen as like a reflection of the oppressive conditions that she lived in. Like she was involved in like street prostitution since she was 14. These men like were raping her or attempting to rape her. And it was never, like, looked at as a self-defense kind of way. It was like, look at this aggressive, masculine lesbian that's killed 7 men type of thing. And I was just like, but you haven't looked at the like, root causes. It wasn't like she had, like, a hatred of men and just went on a killing spree. There was, like, reasons behind it. And she framed it as, like, she was doing it as protecting other girls from suffering the same fate that she did.
Yeah. She said in one of her interviews, like, she was cleaning the streets up, basically, with these men who were rapists, essentially. And, yeah, even further back in her history, I did a research project on her in high school. And in her family, too, like, there was a lot of sexual abuse from, I'm pretty sure it was her father and her brother, and then she had to escape, and then she turned to like prostitution, hitchhiking on the side of the road, and then this, like, I think it was the first killing was an act of self-defense in a way, and then when I was reading through it more, there it was kind of unclear from the media what the intentions were after a while.
Yeah, I mean, like, her case is, like, kind of one of the older ones, but even in the more recent ones, like, there's a really famous case in England at the moment of a nurse, which, again, is playing into, like, the caregiver role. I think she killed 7 babies, and she attempted killing a further 6 in a hospital. And she, like, the media typography of her is like she's wicked, she's cruel, she's like sadistic and stuff, but like there's what they like failed to realize, well, like report on, like when I was researching it, is like there was a note found in like her home when she was arrested, and it's like a whole spiel of her like expressing remorse and like feeling guilty and saying like she's no idea why she did it and she like hates herself for it, but they don't show that in the like media at all.
Fit in.
Yeah, because like she needs to be portrayed as like this extra bad person to justify it.
Yeah,
like
it doesn't show any nuance. It's just like here's the stereotype that we're gonna push. So it's kind of like a safe way. Like, okay, this is the only reason she deviated.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting how those kind of female killers of infants are very much represented as completely evil and just terrible. There's nothing, no redeeming things about it. And like, yeah. But then if we look at men who sexually abuse children, there's not a very similar rhetoric there at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I feel like
there's always this, like, with a woman, it's always like, yeah, you have to be categorized into this, like, horrific, you know, section. But with a man, there's always, like, so many explanations behind why they might do it. Like, when you're talking about how there's, like, this Marxist understanding where it's, like, these structures led her to do this.
Yeah.
But a lot of people just see them as, like, an individual that is just bad to the core or crazy or completely victimized and, like, only reacting because of this trauma. But with a man, there's so many justifications always for pretty much, like, any form of sexual assault that happens that you hear constantly. Like, with alcohol, for example, it's so interesting how alcohol is weaponized when it comes to women, but then used as justification when it comes to men. Like, if a woman is sexually assaulted when she's drunk, that is her fault for being drunk. But if a man is drunk, he couldn't help it. It was the alcohol.
Yeah, totally.
And even, like, without alcohol, there's, like, this, like, narrative of men can't help themselves. It's in their nature.
Yeah.
Like, but if, like, a woman was to, like, go around and be, like, what's called, like, promiscuous, it would be, like, God, like, this, like, whore complex type of thing. And I'm just, like, the double standards of it all.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's rooted back into these, like, gender roles of, like, when you are a mother and this, like, monogamous gender role compared to, like, this man who owns a woman. You know, it, like, so much of this, like, property narrative. And that's why with, I feel like, so much sexual assault or sexual abuse cases, it is, like, almost, justified by, like, society justifies it because of this, like, property narrative, if that makes sense. Like, he owns her, it's okay. Like, how, for example, with marital rape, it's only been outlawed in, like, outlawed in a lot of countries only, like, 20 to 30 years ago in a lot of Western countries.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like people think, like, the road to, like, gender equality and, like, women centering themselves has been, like, this, like, long road, and it's all happened, like, so far, like, in the past and stuff, when it's all actually more recent than what it is. Like, you see it in a lot of, like, inequalities that, like, people think, oh, we've, like, come so far, we're doing, like, so much, like, since, like, so and so. When you look at it now and you're like, one, we haven't actually come that far, and two, all, like, the, like, stark changes that are making a difference are all recent. They're not really, like, from, like, years and years and years ago. It's still, like, a recent problem.
Yeah, definitely. And you can see that in some statistics as well that I was looking at. I was just curious about how many rapists actually get convicted. And it was in 2019 in the UK, it was 3.3%. And I think that's out of only ones that are even reported and taken all the way to court. And a lot of the victims do eventually close their cases before they can go all the way because of how traumatic it is and the treatment of these victims within the justice system, compared to, I think, the total number of crimes in the UK in 2019, the conviction rate was 9.2%.
Oh my God.
So that's three times higher for rape cases, and that's not even counting all the ones that weren't reported or weren't taken all the way. So,
because it has to be such, like, an, like, a sort of quote unquote perfect rape case to even bring it to court. So it's like that number is so much lower than actually happens.
It, like, totally is.
How are you even going to be able to convict someone when so much, like Stella was saying, we were talking about this last night, and we were saying, like, she was like, so much of rape happens between, like, people who know each other, you know, like domestic rape, and, like, between family and friends and people that, you know, you're supposed to feel safe around.
Yeah.
And then maybe you only realize later, you know what I mean? There's so many instances where you can't even go to court, because how would you even prove it when it happened in your own home?
Yeah, exactly. Like, this whole idea of needing evidence for rape is just, it it kind of operates in a different way because there's no, like, there's, you can, like, it's kind of a crime that doesn't have a lot of evidence most of the time, unless it's like a violent rape or it's like by a stranger or it's caught in public or something like that where there's witnesses, but most of the time there's no witnesses, and then it falls into this idea of the he said she said narrative that we were all talking about yesterday, which is pretty harmful because I think Logan was saying that it doesn't take into account to like the power dynamics of he said she said. And even in cases where there are like people who are supporting the victim, it's still framed as he said she said, even though it's he said they said. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, definitely.
Yeah.
Like he said, and then five people said, no, actually he did it, but it's still like, ooh, it's even footing.
Yeah.
And also, like, back to this idea of power dynamics, like, so much of the justice system has, like, approaches the issue. I mean, this is why, like, part of the reason why this whole justice system is completely, like, horrible and needs
general.
To be, yeah, revamped, if you want to say, or revolutionized, is that it really approaches the issue from this, like, equal footing as if, like, what I was saying yesterday was that, like, as if, like, one person stole a, like, two kids were in the kitchen and there was a cookie stolen. One of them says that her brother did it, and the other says, no, my sister did it, and who's gonna know?
And like, they both have the same incentive to say yes or no, like, the other person did it, so...
The whole idea of, like, the incentive that rape victims have to come forward is just complete and utter...
BS,
exactly. Yeah. Like, in what sense has there ever been... Name, like, 20 rape victims that have come forward and gotten positive fame from it. Because I have only heard of negative fame, of, like, losing their reputation, of being cut off. And yet, I... feel like I can name like 15, 20 famous people that are rapists and that many women have come forward and said, this man assaulted me or this woman assaulted me. And yet they have an untarnished reputation. Even some people are just sending hate letter, and there's so much negative, visceral reactions against these victims of rape. And yet almost like this kind of glorification and sometimes like romanticization of some of these men.
It's like so many of their actions can't be excused if they're a great director or if they're like a great musician or things like that. It's like, oh yeah, like he did all these terrible things, but you know, he's really good at what he does, and the rest of his life, like he is very exceptional. Like you're still looking at him aside from this terrible thing that he did and looking at the scope of his entire life and prioritizing that over, you know, whatever this woman has to say. And it's just completely discredited a lot of the time.
And it's like the woman... Sorry, no.
This is okay. No, but it's like I was going to say, like, you look at how many people had to come forward for the Harvey Weinstein, like, case for it to actually, like, be seriously considered. Like, the amount of women, both famous and not famous, to come forward and back, like, the whole, like, hashtag Me Too movement just for him to, like, get put to trial.
Yeah.
Type of thing. And I think I read somewhere, like, a year ago or something that he's, like, appealing because there was one of my lecturers. He was so, like, ashamed because one of his papers, which was written to, like, say that juries need to be, like, re-looked at in rape and sexual assault cases because they're not the most effective way of coming to a verdict.
No, it was used.
But it was used. It was twisted in the wrong way to justify an appeal in his case to say, like, the juries weren't making an effective decision. And he was just, like, so shocked because he was like, that was not the point. Like, the...